meeting to order of the joint Senate House subcommittees on local government to hear testimony on Senate Bill 113, which is a codification, a proposed codification of all the state laws regarding local government. Before we go into the what we're going to do this evening and discuss this, I'd like to introduce two very important people and have them make a few remarks, because in their hands lies the future of this bill. On my right is the chairman of the Senate Local Government Committee, Senator John Reeder of Anchorage, and on my left is Senator Mike Miller of the House Local Government Committee of Fairbanks, of Juneau. John, you want to say a few words before we go into the actual testimony?
Ed, whenever we get into a bill of this magnitude, the question always is how many basic policy changes we should incorporate in it. The history of these bills is that if you get too many basic policy changes involved, you never get the bill passed, because you offend enough people that they consolidate their respective grievances to present a block to you. I'm sure that at least in the House, we will try to make a judgment as to how far we can go on policy changes. I don't want any of you, though, to limit your testimony to milk and peaches and cream and apple pie. The policy changes that you think should be made, we'll appreciate hearing about, and then we will exercise collective judgment in our committee as to which ones we incorporate in the bill and which ones we might try to put into other bills. As I say, it's a very difficult thing to decide as to how far you should go in one single bill. And we will go as far as our effective judgment, at least in the Senate, as far as we think we can go, and still get past the Senate for policy changes. That's one thing I have to say.
Representative Miller?
Let me say one other thing. So far as the Senate side of this thing is concerned, those of you who are concerned with it should contact Ed. Ed's work product, and Ed has agreed to undertake what has to be the most tedious and difficult piece of legislation in this session, probably. And on the House side of it, really, to coordinate this thing, you're going to have to work through Ed, not me, because we can't both ride herd on this, and Ed is the one who is going to be riding herd on it and making the policy decisions. So far as our committee is concerned, he will make those policy decisions as though he's the chairman of the committee.
Mike? Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll just echo the statements that John just made. I'd like to briefly introduce two other members of the House Local Government Committee. That's Dick Whitaker, Vice Chairman of the committee, and far end down here, Red Swanson. I have nothing really further to add other than the fact that we view this as really probably one of the major pieces of legislation, not just to come before this committee, but to come before the legislature. And speaking personally, and I think for the rest of the committee as well, we look forward, with great hopes to being able to bring some order out of what's presently some chaos, and certainly attack the problem in that vein.
I'd like to introduce Greg Maciejowski, a Legislative Affairs Agency, who has worked on this probably more than any other person from 1964, I believe. On Greg, good to have you here.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
And he's the young man that drafted the final product.
Would you want to make this?
Yeah, Greg, I think maybe I'd like to have you over here.
Very good. Very good.
I also want to publicly state how much I personally appreciate the cooperation of the House Local Government Committee, because even though this bill may or may not go through this session, I don't know. I'm reasonably certain some form of this legislation is going to go through either this one or the next one, but without the cooperation of both committees, I think this would be an impossible task, because most members are very suspicious of any bill this length, first of all. And secondly, unless you lay the foundation for this type of legislation, we could all agree up here and never get through. And I think it's great to work this on a joint team basis, and I certainly appreciate the cooperation of Chairman Mike Miller. Before we go into the witnesses, I just want to make a few general remarks myself. The press release, or the description of this bill, which was prepared by Legislative Affairs and approved by our subcommittee, discuss various provisions of the bill, and they talk about the background. I think we ought to get some recognition to Harold Hansen. Many times timing is what makes legislation go through, not the merits of it. And I just feel as though the right time for this type of legislation. But Harold Hansen of Cordova spent literally months, and isn't that great to confirm this, in ours and his subcommittee holding hearings on this bill. But they couldn't even get it on the floor of the legislature after all that hard work. But I think it would be appropriate to recognize Harold, even though he isn't here, for all the hard work he did. Secondly, I believe the Alaska Cities and Legislative Committee did an awful lot of work. As a matter of fact, this is based upon big recommendations, with the omission of the annexation provisions, which we hope will be the subject of a separate bill. But I could go on and on and recognize people, but I think it's very important to note historically there's been a lot more work, and we're sort of newcomers on this, but maybe this is the right time. And so without any further ado, I'd like to proceed right into the hearings. Remember, they're scheduled for tomorrow and Wednesday.
So that we all know each other here and we're all in the same room and going to be working with each other, why don't we go around the room and every one of you identify yourself and your affiliation and you represent where you're from, so we get to know each other on together on a regular basis.
I'm Jim Heidi, and I'm the city manager from the city of Ketchikan.
I'm Don King, and I'm the borough chairman from the city, or borough of Ketchikan.
Ketchikan Gateway Borough, I think it's called.
He's been coaching me all evening.
I'm Bill Curtis, city manager from Palmer.
Bill Barrier, city and borough attorney, Juno.
Warren Christensen, city attorney and school board attorney from Sitka.
Jim Nordiel, I'm the attorney for the Kenai Peninsula Borough.
Jim Bruce, attorney for the Fairbanks North Shore Borough.
I'm Bob Sharp, and I'm not an attorney for anybody.
Yeah, but you're pretty sharp.
Peter Whitaker from Ketchikan.
Mike Miller for the second tier. Yeah, about the second tier. Who's this Roscoe here? I've never met him. Good to see you, Roscoe.
Roscoe Bell, VP Alaska.
Carolyn Rader, Observer. I'm Marla Sturgeluski, Chairman of the Greater Anchorage Area Planning and Zoning Commission. And there's a mouthful.
Party and interest. Hank?
Hank Estrosi from NACMEC.
Don Berry, the Alaska Municipal League.
I'm Hal Toby, City Attorney for Anchorage.
Don Gilmer, Planning Director of Fairbanks North Star Borough.
Vern Wiggins, Planning Director for the Greater Anchorage Borough.
Well, good to have you here. See, that's a, you know, it's a different atmosphere between these and the Public Utility Commission hearings we had the last couple of years. Let's start off with that theme. Everything's
what are you looking at me for?
We're just starting.
Wait a little more.
The good old boss smile. He wouldn't smile the last couple of years. Let's start out this week. As I mentioned, the league did a lot of work on this. Don, why don't you, as president, Don King is president of the Municipal League, you, I understand, want to make an opening statement and introduce some of your people, and why don't we proceed in an orderly way on that? Because one of the things the committee is very interested in is changes from existing law, as reflected in this code, and the background and what you people did. Put this together and introduce your people. You can proceed, Don. Go ahead.
Well, it's really a pleasure to be here tonight, and I would like to this time thank the local government committee for giving us time to meet with us and go over this problem, which was started roughly 6 years ago in a small little legislative committee for the Municipal League, which I happen to be a member of for 3 years. And today, and at this meeting now, it gives me a lot of pleasure in being here and being able to see that finally, that 6 years of work has come to the point that maybe we are actually going to accomplish something with this bill. Senator Rader, I want to thank you and Representative Miller, and I don't know that I can pronounce your name or not. Great.
Matyowski.
Matyowski.
That's a name you want to learn because it's going to be very important.
Very.
But there has been a lot of blood and sweat went into this. Bob Sharp and a group of us sat yesterday and discussed this thing in his room, and then we weren't satisfied with that. We went down and discussed it later in the evening while we ate supper for about 2.5 hours. And as I say, this has been going on for at least 6 years that I know. So without further ado, and I do want to thank this committee for all the work that you have done, and I'm going to turn it over now to my friend here, Mr. Bill Curtis, to introduce, who is chairman of the Legislative Committee for the Municipal League, and let him introduce his people who also have put a lot of blood and sweat in this. Thank you.
Thank you, Don.
Thank you, Don.
Go ahead.
With your permission, Senator, I would like to introduce the battery that we have brought. Bill Barrier from Juneau, Warren Christensen from Sitka, and G. Jim Nordale from the Kenai Peninsula Borough. These three people in particular have all worked on this bill for over 6 years. I personally have worked with this group for 2 years and was unfortunate enough to be elected chairman of the committee, so now I don't have to participate. But I brought them along for backup here. But I would like to possibly bring you up to date a little bit on this. Some of you, particularly Senator Rader, I know have worked on this before or have been involved in it. The Municipal League has been involved in this for a number of years. We have attempted to draft a bill to present for adoption. And those of you that have worked on it know that this is a lot of bill to introduce. It isn't something that anybody can walk in green and look at it, read it. It doesn't mean a thing. You have to know what the old bills were. In other words, Title 29, Title 7. You have to have worked with them administratively. In other words, you have to have lived by them as your Bible or as your law to know what this bill really does. And there have been many flaws in the old sections that we've lived with. One which the legislature last year, I can point out as an example, amended. That was the particular section on assessments. Those of you that are familiar with it, I'm just using this for an example. There were two basic methods of special assessments which we lived with for years. One of them was by council action and one of them was by petition of the people. The people could petition for a particular improvement. In other words, if they wanted pavement, water, sewer, whatever it was, when they petitioned the council or the assembly, it said they agreed to pay 2/3 of the cost. Now, you don't build streets or water or sewer or anything else for 2/3 of the cost. By the same token, the other side of the ledger said that the council could initiate the petition and the people would pay 100% of the cost. Now, we lived with this thing for years, and it was nothing more than just a technical flaw in it. If the people wanted this improvement and they wanted to agree to pay 100% of the cost, why shouldn't they be able to do it? But it was just one of those technicalities in the law. They would come forward with a petition. The first thing the council or assembly had to do was throw it out and say, then we will initiate it, and then you can pay 100% of the cost. But what happened was you went through another 65-day waiting period to get the project to the point where you could then begin to work. So you could waste 30 days fooling around with a petition of the people, then throw it out and say, no, we won't do it because we can only assess you 2/3. Now the council will initiate this and we will charge you 100%, and 65 days from now we can get the job started. So this is just one of the things. The Title 7, Title 29 were full of these little problems of this type. This group has sat down, and it's basically through experience, through working with it day in and day out, going through these problems, that they have, through their own experience, put their finger on these various problems. And we have tried to bring this code, this administrative code, to where it's workable, to where it's not a burden on either the cities or the boroughs. And yet we have tried to make no substantive changes in it. In other words, we have made changes, what we would call appreciable changes, but we have not tried to change the concept of the borough and the city as we have to live with each other. And the boroughs and the cities, I'm sure, we still have our differences of opinion, but the Municipal League together, which is all of the cities and all of the boroughs, with the exception of a few, have agreed that this is a very good compromise and that it's a very good working administrative code. You, in going over it, and you'll have to go over it, I'm sure you will find small errors in it. You'll find typographical errors. You will find things that maybe we felt were more essential one way or another, and that you, as the legislative body of the state, might feel the other way. But what I'm trying to say is I don't think you will find major problems that we have in any way tried to pull the wool over your eyes, that we have tried to change the basic concept as we know it. We've tried to smooth it out, try to make it workable, and a good administrative code. And I think, I hope, we have done this. We've spent literally hundreds of man hours on it, and a good portion of this has been spent in the last 3 months, so it is current. It reflects, I believe, every change that the legislature made in the last session. It's brought up to date, and we feel that outside of a few typographical errors and this sort of thing, that it is in good workable order. I think the one thing that the league itself feels is that we hope that this bill and this hearing will be held down to working on a good administrative code. In other words, we as the league do not want to get involved with making changes in the basic concept of the borough city philosophy as the Constitution provided. We've not tried to change that, and we don't want to get involved in it. If there are others who come forward at this testimony and want to do so, I think we would hope that you as a group would not be drawn into it. But this is your prerogative. It is your hearing. But we're here primarily to introduce or to testify for this bill. It is a cleanup, a smoothing out, and a very needed revision of the bills that we have used as an administrative code for a number of years. That's basically Title VII and 29 as they're known to all of us. We feel that this is a much more workable situation, and we hope that it doesn't get involved with, shall we change the borough code, shall we change the city code? This is something that we don't want to get involved in. I think with that, I would like to refer this on over to the rest of the delegation that we have here. Again, I do not, Senator Murdy's, want to run the show, but if I could take the privilege of passing this on to Billy Barrier, he would like to point out item by item where we have made appreciable changes in the bill. In other words, specifically point them out. We don't want to go through this item by item, but where we have, the Municipal League, registered a change in the old code, I think Bill could point this out to us. If any of you want to be specific or ask a specific question on it, either now or a later date, we could answer it. But where these changes are, you could mark these on your copies of the bills. And from there, Mr. Nordahl, Mr. Christensen could go into some of the specifics where we have made appreciable changes and explain why we have done this.
Thank you very much, Don. Before we go to Bill, does any of the committee members want to address a question to Don?
Mr. Chairman, Bill, I know that you have attempted to stay away because of the organization of municipal people here, including both cities and boroughs, as a joint effort to try not to alter those relationships. This committee, however, of course, is not bound at all.
That's right.
If we can see some way to ease some of the friction that exists and to make it a more workable system to where we can accomplish our purpose here in local government, we'll probably do that. I hope that all the witnesses who do have areas of friction and know of areas of friction will mention them to us and let the committee decide whether or not we should go into them in this bill or whether or not we even agree with you as to the possible solution. But we don't really want this to be only a codification of existing law. I'm sure that the committee would like to consider some of the areas of friction. As I say, it will be a value decision as to whether or not we can include them in the bill or not. So I hope that you'll point them out as we come to them and discuss the fights that you had among yourselves in the drafting of this bill on these particular sections, what the cities wanted and what the boroughs wanted and how you resolved it, and give us the arguments on it so we can see if we can do something substantive.
Bill, there's one other thing. We asked our staff people to get all the legislation that's pending in the House and Senate to try to annotate it, connect it into this bill so that the committee can look at it comprehensively before we take any action on it. Any further questions, Mr. Curtis? You can introduce. You must say anything.
Senator Murray, I would like to say we didn't come into this on the basis of creating friction or particularly discussing areas that we know would be friction. I think we're all familiar with many areas. I would hope that maybe we could give our basic presentation here tonight without getting into this. We do intend to be here tomorrow and the next day if necessary, and I think we certainly can get into these at a later date if this would be acceptable. And if we touch on them tonight, any one of you want to ask, or we'd certainly be willing to discuss it, but we'll go through it in this manner, and then we can get into the friction areas.
Bill, you want to introduce yourself?
Yes. I'm Bill Berry. You're the attorney for the city and borough of Juneau.
For the record, too, will you give us the date? This is the 22nd of February, 1971.
Yes, February 22nd, 1971. One difficult thing is to try to spell out the way that this differs from current law. The reason this is difficult is it's an entire recodification of current law. And essentially, it differs all the way through. Its arrangement differs, its format differs, and its simplicity differs. One thing, though, I thought you might be interested in is where we have some appreciable departures from existing law. I'm not here talking about form or style or smoothness, by and large, but matters in this bill that do change existing law noticeably. These, of course, depends on your orientation as to what you consider important. So, obviously, exhaustively, you'd have to go through section by section. I'm not going to tackle that. I'll pick the ones that we consider more important. I think the first one you come to is probably the most significant change in the entire bill, and that's on classification of municipalities, Chapter 8. Currently, we have four classes of cities, first, second, third, and fourth. Under this bill, there would only be two classes of cities, denominated first and second, and they would correspond, the first class city would correspond to the present first class city, the second class city under this bill would correspond to the present fourth class city, and the second and third class cities would not exist under this bill. They would become first class cities. The other change in this section is that an incorporated community of over 400 people are mandatorily made a first class, not a fourth class city. The next change is in Article 2.
Excuse me, Senator. Would you like for us to interrupt when we have a question?
I'm perfectly agreeable if it's agreeable with the committee.
If the witness is fine with me, go ahead, Representative.
Well, I just wondered, just for my information, would you repeat again now the first, second, third, and fourth? The first stays first.
The first stays first.
The fourth becomes second.
The fourth becomes second.
And the second and third become first?
Become first class cities.
Excuse me, I thought.
Assuming they have the appropriate population.
Thank you.
Next, we pulled together the limitations on home rule power in one place. Currently, there are several sections in the statutes that are express limitations on home rule power. We had always assumed that everybody was pretty confident of what did and what did not limit home rule opinion, and all of us thought we knew what they were. However, I'm not at all confident after Chugiak that the Supreme Court does, so it has a very useful purpose of listing them in one place. I won't go into the Chugiak decision. The next change of some significance is in the transitional assistance. Currently, organizational grants are made.
Repeat the section.
Yes. It's Article 3, 2918-180. Currently, provision is made that when a borough is newly incorporated, there is a state grant to aid it in getting on its feet and starting a new government. It was our feeling that should it be desirable to incorporate a new city would have precisely the same problems of getting on its feet, getting rolling, and waiting until some taxes come in that a borough would. So we've broadened this to include the cities within the transitional grants. On the next one is 2923060. In procedure, and in this, we have smoothed out the assembly procedure. eliminating some of the problems that anybody that's ever worked with a borough assembly is aware of from the section. For example, the question of what is a substantive change is eliminated. We've made a technical change from 7 days' notice to 5 days' notice. It gives the same effective notice, but it allows you to continue meeting on a regular meeting date. This is essentially nothing but a smoothing out, but it's highly important if you've ever worked with trying to get ordinances through a borough assembly. The next, under the executive veto, 2923-170 and 2923-270. 170 refers to the borough executive. 270 refers to the city executive. Some questions about the veto power have been clarified in this, and there is one significant broadening. The mayor or the borough chairman is given a line item veto over budget items. The city council essentially has changed. We're dealing, of course, with home rule here. Not with home rule, we're dealing with general law. Currently, under general law, you have the strong council, weak mayor system. This switches to the strong mayor system, which is currently, as far as I know, almost universally adopted when you have home rule and have a choice. The next section is 2923-310 on school boards. We've shortened this section in existing law because much of the section is now contained in Title 14, and this is a duplicate of Title 14. We have made no substantive changes, but it appears so, unless you recognize the cross-reference to Title 14. Then we go pretty far over, all the way to Article 3, 2928-130-250. On recall, the significant change here is at a recall election, the successor to the person recalled does not run at the same election. Otherwise, the procedures, again smoothed out, are essentially identical. Under the assessment and collection of taxes, 2933-030, a provision has been added that the borough assembly also collects the sales and use tax as well as the property tax. This gets away from the double system that's currently in effect. Under planning and zoning, the entire official map section is new law. There has been consistently official map bills, but none has ever passed. Under additional area-wide powers, there are two factors here. First,
Chairman, I wonder if I could ask Mr. Berger to go just a little bit more slowly because I'm having trouble making notes as you're going.
I'm sorry.
I need to retard the operation.
Sure. The next section is Article 5, Additional Area-Wide Powers, 2933-250 through 290. This has two areas of change. Currently, to add an area-wide power, even though you have to have a vote of the people or a transfer from city council, you have to run it through local affairs agency, which basically, in this instance, accomplishes nothing. This is eliminated. And there is a certain ambiguity in existing law as to whether a second-class borough may acquire powers by transfer from a city. There's a specific provision authorizing first-class boroughs to do so, and there is another specific provision saying that first- and second-class boroughs shall exercise powers transferred from a city. I'm not real sure whether a second-class borough currently has this power or not, but under this bill, it clearly does have the power to acquire additional area-wide powers by transfer from a city. Again, on 2938-010 through 050, the question of additional area-wide powers, the local affairs agency was taken out of the picture. You no longer submit it to local affairs prior to having your election. The next change is in 2948-030, and this, I think, is more illustrative of the entire form of the bill than it is actually a change in itself. Currently, the powers given to boroughs and cities are spelled out in great detail. This bill, by and large, is a rather skeleton bill. Instead of spelling it out in detail, it merely lists the power. In Article 2,
but there's no change in their substitute law. Is that correct?
I was looking through this, John, and I don't see any.
Well, none was intended.
I don't think so. The next section, which is essentially on utilities, 2948-040-100, essentially codifies existing law, which is not statutory law. And basically what it does is provide that if the Public Service Commission regulates, the regulations of the Public Service Commission overrides, but that the Public Service Commission has not preempted the field, and in areas that they have not regulated, the municipalities are still free to.
Now, as I understand, you're saying that the cities will exercise franchising and public utility regulation within their borders unless the Public Service Commission exercises jurisdiction.
Yes. Well, even if they exercise jurisdiction, as long as there's no conflict. In case of conflict, the Public Service Commission overrides specifically. Where there is no conflict, the municipality may still exercise regulatory authority.
What about grandfathering rights? What if the municipality is exercising franchise power right now? They're not exercising one, and the Public Service Commission isn't exercising, but the city just sort of decides to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Can the Public Service, or the Public Utilities Commission come in and take it away from the city?
It certainly can, and it can under existing law.
In other words, there's no grandfather rights.
There are no grandfather rights. And if you take the case law together with the current statutes, this is my firm impression that this is the existing law. It just isn't spelled out in statutes solely.
Does it change the public? Does it change the statute in any way that we enacted last year? By implication, in your judgment, Mr. Attorney?
That's a difficult question to answer. What it has done, and I don't know where you'd consider this a change, the primary thing it did was spell out the Chugach decision of conflict but not preemption. You know, Chugach versus City of Anchorage, the court held that in a conflict situation, the Public Service Commission overrode, but that does not have preemptive jurisdiction. And this point is not covered in current statutory law. It's just solely case law.
What about right-of-ways and line rights within the city? Remember that big dispute?
This would not... specifically, let me call your attention to 2948-100 on page 64. The wording actually is important. In case of conflict between the provisions of section 50 to 70 of this chapter and the provisions of AS 4205, which is the regulations of rate of utility, the provisions of AS 4205 shall prevail. So these that you were referring to last year specifically override this bill. None of the amendments were made to the municipal code. They were made to Title 42, unless I'm grossly mistaken. I don't recall any having been made except 242. Also, could I call your attention? Oh, excuse me.
I was just checking out Congress. Some of the amendments were made.
Yes. Chris just pointed this out, and the specific thing that you're talking about is covered. It's on page 61, section 2948050C. I'm sorry, I was mistaken. But it does specifically cover it.
It repeats essentially what was put in Title 29 last year.
Yes.
It doesn't purport support the change existing law?
It is a very careful attempt to preserve existing law exactly as it is.
After we get through with this, maybe you'll suggest some changes.
As a matter of fact, I happen to be one of the few municipal attorneys that like the PSC bill, John, remember? I'm sure with some of the members of the committee could.
Excuse me, Bill, you want to say something, Doc?
No, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I've said it all.
Last year. Go ahead,
then. Then, on the budget and capital improvement program, again, we're dealing with general law municipalities, not home rule.
Keep talking about chapters.
This is 2948190. There is no current provision fixing the fiscal year for a general law municipality. As far as I know, everybody uses the July 1st fiscal year, but this specifically provides that.
Some don't.
And another thing here of some importance, currently, general law cities use the first reading, second reading, third reading method of passing bills, whereas the boroughs use the presentation, introduction, and hearing. And this has pulled these two together. All general law municipalities now use, under this bill, would use a system that the boroughs currently use. In essence, these come out very much the same. It's largely a terminology difference. Under 2948270, currently emergency disaster powers are only given to boroughs and first-class cities. We broaden this to all municipalities. It occurred to us if any municipality has a disaster, it needs disaster powers. I'm sorry, I wasn't going to get into merits changes. Sections 2948310 to 330 are new law, which generally corresponds to the constitutional mandate of liberal construction and also ties in to the different form that we're using of the skeletonized system rather than a detailed method system of setting out powers. Under general property tax, 2953010 to 180, an omission is probably the most appreciable change made. Currently, there's a provision that boats may be taxed at $5 and $15 on an optional basis. This section is omitted from the code, which means that boats would be taxed at full and true value.
What section is that?
Omission. It's an omission out of the entire article, which means, of course, that boats fall in just where everybody else does it.
Did everybody agree to that?
Yes.
Wow. Nobody here from Petersburg,
obviously.
Man, there's a big
fight
on that bill.
Petersburg.
Where's Petersburg?
At least
by tomorrow.
Yeah.
I'll be at
it. Incidentally, I might add that most of the legislative committee members didn't feel awfully strongly one way or another, but this seemed a highly preferable taxation.
As long as no substantive changes are being made, why not?
Minor changes.
We're pointing it out, anyway.
Under 2953240, there's a change that wouldn't be important to anybody but an attorney. We currently have something that doesn't bother you here, but if you get into some of the other areas, drives you crazy, a requirement that your tax foreclosure list has to be filed on the same day it's published, which can create immense difficulties if your publisher doesn't happen to be in the same town. So we have the publication need not be on the same day as filing. It just has to be within 10, is it 10 days?
10, yeah.
Within 10 days of this time. 2953360 is a change from current law. Current
360?
360, deed to borough or city. Currently, you bring a tax foreclosure, regardless of where the property is located. At the end of the tax foreclosure, the borough takes title. Under this section, title to lands located within the city would go to the city. Within the borough, it would go to the borough. Some people feel strongly about it. I'm not sure I consider it particularly important, because on resale, you distribute it according to the respective liens anyway.
It's just a matter of who...
It's a matter of who holds title in the meantime, essentially.
Well, if the borough is to be in charge of the responsibility of collection of taxes and so on and so forth, why would all the deeds go to the borough and the borough, when they sold it, prorate it back? Isn't that a collection problem? Foreclosure is a part of the collection of taxes.
Senator,
yes.
I think one of the major problems is that there's always in the law the provision of the land can be used for public use. So is it the borough's public use or the city's public use? Do I want to build a park or do you want to build a parking lot? So this is where the problem arises. Is the property, if it happens to be in the city, more essential to a public use in the city? Or could it be more essential to a public use to the borough? Outside of that, it really makes no difference. But if both had reason to use it for public use, then you've got a conflict between borough and city.
Well, assuming that they both have a half interest in it because of the equivalent bill levy, then one of them is ending up with the asset and the other one without the taxes, I guess.
No, you always have to pay the other bit.
May I answer this, John? I think it's specifically covered, and I see what you're getting at. You'd about have to look at the section. If you look at section C, you establish the priority of public use.
Page
84. This establishes the priority, and the city has priority of public use if it's within the city. But if it has no public use, the borough may take it. If it's outside, the borough has priority, but if it does not have an immediate public use, the city may take it. And under 2953.385, if either take it for public use, they must pay the unpaid tax and assessment held by the other municipalities. So, I'm...
Fair arrangement.
Bill, do you think it possible to require the borough and city to record this deed? Because I see you got a 2-year statute of limitations. After 2 years of letting the deed is conclusively presumed, this is in the same section we're talking about. Mm-hmm. Do you see any objection to requiring the borough or the city to record the deed so as to give notice to somebody if they pick it up on a title check? I mean, that's a pretty...
A title check, of course, you'd pick...
conclusive presumption after 2 years.
The deed's filed in the court file, and the title check could pick it up, but I certainly don't see any objection to recording it in the recorder's office also if you want to.
I was wondering if you deliberately... Because, a judgment's not a lien unless you record it anyways, even though it's in the court files.
But a change of ownership in the court file does give constructive notice on the tax foreclosure. But if you feel that it's preferable to record,
I don't. One way or the other. I just wanted to know if you had any objection to requiring the city and the borough to record the deed.
Not a bit. Matter of fact, you might add a certain amount of regularity by.
Incidentally, any other attorneys going to say anything?
Well, yes, although I was trying not to get into the matter too much of the substance during Bill's initial run-through, but I do a lot of property work, and I feel that this is one of the reasons why there are lots of changes, both major and minor, hopefully not too many major ones, in this bill, which are going to come out in hearings like this. And to see a change like this come up in a hearing makes me feel very good, because I think there are a lot of people in a lot of the smaller towns that sometimes check their own titles or check a title of some piece of property. Now, maybe they should be going to an attorney, but nevertheless, they do it themselves. And usually they limit themselves to a check of the grantor-grantee index.
Right.
And if they see this in here on record, it's going to be highly beneficial.
You agree with that, then?
I very definitely do.
We'll make a note of it. Well, continue, Bill.
In 2953.410, sales and use tax, there is the addition of the power to levy a use tax for a general law municipality. Currently, most home rule municipalities levy a use tax, but there's no general law authority to do so. The next is the addition of an entire article.
Excuse me, Bill. You say general law municipalities. I'm mixed up in your terminology. Call general law municipalities first class?
General law municipality is contrasted to home rule.
As anybody who's not home rule.
Anyone who is not home rule.
What section is that about?
2953.410.
Okay.
tax was never previously to home rule.
There is no general law authority for use tax now, John. $29.58.010-040 on tax anticipation notes is added. There is no general law authority to issue tax anticipation notes, despite the fact that several general law municipalities, including our borough, has done so. I got approving opinions. How, I'm not quite sure. I was amazed when I found out we didn't have the authority after I'd borrowed under them. Fortunately, we paid that one out. For $500,000? $29.58.205, no election required on revenue bonds, is new language. Under general law, elections are required under home rule. It depends on your charter, and of course would depend on your charter even after this passed. Special assessments, you just heard of the change that was made last year on special assessment procedures. Unfortunately, this change didn't go far enough. You still have a situation that there are two distinct special assessment procedures. Depending on whether it's initiated by the public, it follows one statute. If it's initiated by the assembly or council, it follows another statute. And these two statutes are very similar but not identical, and the differences are not particularly well thought out. I suspect it's just a pure coincidence that one was drafted at one time, one was drafted at another, and they don't tie together. So we have one special assessment procedure. And incidentally, there's a 2963-010 has a little bit that we're rather fond of.
2963-010?
2963-010. Put an asterisk by that. We may assess state properties for local improvement districts.
Just a second, I want to go one step further. Bob Sharp may be familiar with this, but you ought to seriously consider, we ought to consider assessing federal property. You don't have it in here now. The way to do it, of course, is what the city of Anchorage did with the university, you know.
No. How?
Yeah, the city of the State University, I mean the community college, wanted sewage, and there was some legal question on whether they were liable for it. Well, the city said, we're simply not going to give you any sewage or water unless you pay for it. You know, I think you can do the same thing with the federal government, too. If you're going to get state involved in this here, well, you should do it. They should pay like anybody else.
They sure should, and I'd love to figure out how to do it.
That we ought to consider seriously, and I wanted to try it out for size of it, because I...
You had noticed that already, huh?
And I'm wondering if you attorneys would at least consider this, because I think we can go about in a roundabout way. If they don't want to pay for it, they don't get it. I mean, it certainly you ought to pay for it. Why should I subsidize federal agencies?
The problem, Mr. Chairman, is sometimes when you can't avoid giving them the service. The street, you have to build it. The sewer and the water, you don't have to connect them.
Yeah, you're right.
The other, you're stuck.
Well, you did it nice to the University of Alaska.
I took care of that very orderly.
Yeah, you did a good job. I want to commend you on that one. I think it's a great idea.
do you have any idea how much money we're talking, the impact on our state budget? Did you fellas try to figure out how much you were going to pick up if you did this?
Actually, Senator, we found out a couple of years ago it was only about $5,000.
Wondering about
your big item one way or another.
It would certainly vary from year to year. In other words,
about 2 years ago when I ran the same study, it ran a little over $5,000. That was before the $900 million.
John and I were discussing, is this retroactive?
20 years?
That's I don't know. It doesn't say. It's pretty ambiguous. You got a lawsuit on it.
It's a thought.
I don't believe we would ask for that.
Well, Greg, will you make a note of this? I think it would be helpful.
The federal?
Research on whether you include the United States government. Well,
if there's some way you can figure out, we're all enthusiastically in favor of it, Ed.
Let me make one observation. I don't think there's a chance in the world of getting that by any of our finance committees unless we know in advance about what we're talking about. So I would suggest to each of you, if you're serious about this, go back home and have your assessor run through it and tell us what we're doing. Well, if we don't have that information, it has no chance. We have
I'll
to be able to present something.
You give it to us, you give the... Still, any administrative work, right, well, too great, will you? Unless there's another thing, you do not intend this to be retroactive. Nothing, it doesn't apply to any existing.
We didn't intend it to be, though.
Well, I
would like to, but no.
We never even considered.
Yeah, I really wish you would consider whether or not.
We'll get it started tomorrow.
Anybody else want to comment? This is particularly affects Jim.
As a matter,
this is music too.
No comments. We got a good thing going.
Mr. Chairman, there's a lot of ways to share revenue with local governments, and one way would be for paying for your services.
I think it's a crime, a dastardly crime, to require local taxpayers to subsidize a state agency. I don't care what the reason.
Actually, we got some state agencies that are voting on the petition process, and they're voting no.
And then not paying.
So the project can't go forward. So it becomes
right?
A little complicated. Ash is doing that at the moment. And John, you'll remember I sent down information to you on it.
I wonder, in that regard, if we should designate somebody in the who votes for the state on that. Now, what if we were building some of public works and building an airport? Or something like that. We would vote on your assessment. How do we do that?
What's occurring is the agency head, who has control over the building or the property, is usually exercising the state decision in our experience now. This could be different elsewhere.
Clarify that. Give maybe the Department of Administration the authority to vote on the assessment.
Yes. Make it more work.
Yes. Well, Ash is the only one who's come to my attention. I don't know any other agencies voted.
Excuse me, just want to make sure. John suggested that on page 94, on lines 18 to 22, consideration of you given to put in some language here is to have one official in the state do the voting so there's some coordination and control on all the state.
Senator?
Yes, Don.
The municipal league has another bill which I think very specifically puts it in the Department of Administration shall be the one to figure out the formula for paying the assessments.
It could be the Division of Buildings, too, because they literally have records.
The league just had to pick the Department of Administration, but that's when we have been working.
Yeah.
We've got a separate bill. Whether that's included in 113 or not, I don't know.
We may get some state. No.
But I can go over that with Craig.
We may get some government, some administration people going to testify at this point anyway.
Yes, we just have broad language here, as you know.
It definitely should be an agency who coordinates with all. In other words, you could build a sidewalk past an airport. You could build a street past a Division of Health and Welfare hospital or clinic. You could build a storm drainage system beneath any public works of a state agency. In other words, you can't pin it down to one public works, Division of Aviation. It's got to be, I would say, logically administration, contract type thing.
There's only one thing about this. When you start assessing the state, you can't make this an open-end claim on the state treasury. So we'll stick it in some language within the state obligation will be to the extent of appropriated funds. Otherwise, this would be an appropriation of state funds by your assessor, which you couldn't do that. So you would get your assessment 1 year and then have to appropriate the funds, and that would depend upon the state appropriating funds. So otherwise, it would be an illegal disbursement to be made with the funds.
Credit.
I see Representative Swanson shaking his head. What do you think of that?
Not saying a word. I'm just listening. We're just raising a tax for the people to pay more tax for themselves. That's all we're doing.
Let's go.
Then there's one other
sure
change, and the last I have listed is 2973-010, actionable claims against the municipality. As you're aware, there are certain limitations on actionable claims against the state. We have copied this. We've taken the current section out of Title IX on actionable claims against the municipality and added the exemptions that the state currently has, which are relatively limited. And this essentially sums up the substantive changes that I see as, or, well, maybe substantive isn't the right word, but the changes of some degree of importance from existing law.
I didn't understand the last section here.
State Tort Claims Act, they got in here.
A little Tort Claims Act. And the quarantine section. And the requirement of timely filing.
Little Tort Claims Act, tell me what it does here.
Good, I'm going to do it. Federal Tort Claims Act and State Tort Claims Act incorporates it in the city and the borough's Tort Claims Act. In other words,
right.
It provides immunity that does not now exist.
Right. Exactly.
Which the state should have, too.
Which
no, the state does have. This is identical with the state,
the state
section.
The state doesn't have much immunity now.
Section that was admitted to the state section. Remember I asked?
Oh, yes. But,
a very significant subsection,
and I assume that there is also a specific bill in on this one. Which section is this? Do you recall, Greg? Of the,
sure.
No. Do you have the omitted section?
Yes, 096507 is the state, that's the local, the present liability statute for the locality. Check 095250, I think that's it. 095250, that's the state liability statute.
I don't have 09.
This one is adopted.
We don't have a Title IX, here's the difficulty. Do you?
Well, did I read this right? You're saying that no action may be brought if the claim an action for tort and it's based upon the exercise of performance or the failure to exercise of performance. 113 line 23.45. Read that again. I jumped from one sentence to the next to make the sentences follow sentence. However, no, I'm turning line 18. However, no action may be brought under this section if the claim, and then jumping down to line 24, is an action for tort and is based upon the exercise of performance or the failure to exercise or perform a discretionary function or duty on the part of a municipal officer or employee, whether or not the discretion involved is abused.
Yes.
Is that typical language?
Yes, that's true.
This is state statute. What it does, really, there's two things. First, if due care is exercised, the mere fact, and he is operating under color of law, the mere fact that the law is invalid will not create a liability against the municipality if the employee is exercising due care. Secondly, if a function is discretionary, liability will not arise because of an abuse of discretion. These are the two exemptions. Now, this is not an exemption for negligence or for willful torts, but it is an exemption when you're acting under color of law and the law that you're acting in under color of turns out to be invalid.
I may state that there's thousands of cases under the Federal Tort Claim Act. This is identical language. It's the Federal Tort Claim Act. This is extremely ambiguous. This is what constitutes a discretionary function or duty. It invites litigation. And this is really, in my judgment, a very substantive change. When you now can sue a city or you're on the same as a private individual,
mm-hmm.
the same rules of tort and everything apply. What you're doing here is given a shield or insulate the city or borough from liability. Now, you have insurance involved here. Presumably, if you get this in, your insurance rates will go down. I think I'd be very interested, to be honest with you, and believe me, this could be a real hooker. This could be somewhere you'd have some trouble with. I'm just telling you right now, unless you've got some facts and figures to show that this language will substantially reduce municipal expenses, insurance premiums, because they'll defend you and pay the judgment properly. And unless you can do that, you just don't have a chance of getting this through, as I know the composition of at least the legislature. This is a very significant change. I can just tell you from personal experiences, I've defended and sued under these, both the federal and state tort claim act.
And the other, which is omitted, and which as it stands needs to be broadened, oh, wait a minute. The third is one arises out of assault, battery, false imprisonment, false arrest, malicious prosecution, abuse of process, libel, slander, misrepresentation, deceit, or interference with contract rights. Is the third limitation of liability of the state.
And the federal government.
Probably so. I'm not familiar with
the state law.
I've never worked with the Federal Tort Claims Act, so I could defer to some of the others or to you, but I've never worked with it, so.
Something we ought to, I know the committee's going to consider seriously. We really wish you'd do one thing, fellas. Will you get the insurance carrier, say for one of them, is presently writing liability insurance for either one of the large cities, and just find out if this passes with their insurance premium, because they can evaluate. Now, if you're not going to get very much of a change, it's no use changing the bill. If you're going to get a substantial change, that would be a reason for keeping it in. I mean, I just know that this is brought up. Will you please give us that information, Greg?
The,
Mr.
Chairman?
Decreased premium cost of liability insurance for cities and boroughs if this stays in.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Greg.
Are we trying to withdraw now within our sovereignty and not allow ourselves to be sued under this chapter?
You can answer it, Bill. No, my understanding is, since I've done it, Representative Swanson, is they're trying to limit. They're still letting themselves be sued, but they're trying to limit their liability in areas involving discretion,
right,
areas involving libel, slander, and personal.
Only under certain conditions?
Right now, they can be sued for that, see?
Yes.
This would limit that, just like the federal government and state government is limited right now. They want the same thing.
Are they
going to
add a fourth act?
Pardon?
Going to add the fourth act there?
There's
three places where we can't be sued now by our Constitution.
Statute
allows us to not be sued under circumstances, and we're just adding another one, aren't we?
Well, what you're doing...
Under certain conditions here.
If this passes, Representative Swanson, this is decreasing the exposure of cities and boroughs.
I'm just trying to be real sure, because it's kind of hard for me to digest these things just right off like you people do.
Well, it's a good question. It's not easy to understand this.
Well, perhaps I might.
I'll defer to someone with more torts experience.
Well, I wouldn't say any more torts experience, but the theory of it is this, that good idea, particularly after talking to some of the people during the recess, that there are many areas in this bill which we intentionally avoided, and we intentionally did not intend to put these in or to create areas of conflict, and in particular, I think the building code one is one to be brought up and to be mentioned. We had discussions going back from as long as I've been on the legislative committee of the league, which has been quite a while. And in the building code factor, we felt that this was an area which would probably cause the bill to be tied up in committee, to be people to take sides. But right now, as the bill is written, we have an area in which the borough and the city people are in essential agreement. And that if we tried to put in so-called improvements, which are improvements to some people and quite the opposite to something else, we would create a polarization and hard and fast sides, and we probably wouldn't get the bill through at all. Now, I think I can speak for the committee, and that our position is that this is, as somebody said here, and I think maybe it was Jim Nordale, a platform on which to build. Now, there are many things, and perhaps the building code is one of them, that could be improved upon, but that the way to do it is to do it with another bill. Now, for example, if this bill, without any conflict on the part of the borough or city people, because whatever issues we have not been, as this bill is presented, borough-city issues, if this bill should pass, and then some other bill comes in, it can amend this, and perhaps should be. But when it is amended, you have a unified, comprehensive basis on which to make amendments that are going to tie in and we can work with. And so what I wanted to emphasize here was, we, of course, the committee is going to do exactly what they want to do. But as far as the the league is concerned, that we would ask you not to jeopardize the passage of this bill by putting in substantive change in the changes in the borough city area of conflict. I'd like to answer any question anybody may have on that, or maybe some of the other folks would like to add something.
Yes, Mr. Representative.
I'd just like to say that I think that there are already too many of these very things that you're talking about in the bill now. I'd like to see a tidy bill which recodifies and does some housekeeping and corrects some problems, but there are quite a few things in the bill now that are going to spook a great number of legislators, and it seems to me that...
Well, perhaps they should be taken out.
We're going to be hung up on these various questions like vote taxes and use taxes,
well,
and whatever, and re-eliminating certain classes of cities that are fairly easy to explain sitting here, but may not be too comprehensible to legislators down below.
Well, I think as far as the position of the Municipal League of Alaska Cities is concerned, is that the Municipal League is concerned, that the if some of these things, and I said I do tend to hang up the bill, they should be taken out. That's exactly why when I started my testimony on the vote, we felt that this was not a major portion of the bill. And as far as the classes of cities are concerned, why, hopefully, this can be explained because there is no jeopardy.
Okay, we appreciate that. Presume that you're referring to what article now that you codified the building code?
Well, in the planning and zoning section,
Article
we didn't...
Four.
Yes, Article 4 of Chapter 33, 29.33.070 on down to 25.33.245. We didn't mention the building code. We didn't. We left it just as it is.
You didn't put it in here?
No. It's not in here. It's just like the existing law. It's not in the existing law either.
Okay, fine. Okay, let's hear from Bob Sharp.
Warren Christensen said everything I was going to say, I think. Now, Mr. Chairman, I will just take a few minutes. I can comment rather constructively on this bill since I didn't work on the committee. That gives you a pretty good license, you know, to talk about the bill. I think they've done a good job keeping in mind the instructions that the committee had to start out with. They were not instructed to get into this whole area of improvement that we've now discussed. They left a few little things so the committee will have something to do, too, I noticed this evening. A few little things there that you want to do to the bill, too. But I don't think there are any monumental problems in resolving this bill where it could be enacted into law and accomplish the purpose that we have in mind. That's not to say that the city of Anchorage will not be propounding other legislation that will go beyond what this bill does, and maybe even the league will in time. I don't know. It's not to say we won't oppose other legislation that may be introduced that goes beyond in some of these areas. We don't agree with it. There's several things in the bill in the fashion of editing, and we feel will be brought to your attention that we will bring to the attention that we haven't done so. The committee itself will be dealing with you on it. And so we've had representation as a city on the committee. Everything that's done and in the bill, we don't necessarily agree with. But nevertheless, the committee as a whole has agreed upon it, and we're going to support the bill as a city individually, as we've done in the past, and we hope you can see fit to enact it into law as a legislature before you go home.
So what a comment, Bob. I was going to ask you this official city position, but you answered your question, and I think it would be of immeasurable assistance to have that statement in the record that the city of Anchorage supports the bill, needless to say. that will be very influential to legislators in that area, and I appreciate your comment for the record. Any questions of any committee members to City Manager Bob Sharp? Okay. Does the City Attorney from Anchorage want to say anything?
Mr. Chairman, I don't think that I have anything particularly to add to what has been said.
Hank, I understand you wanted to say something.
Yeah, I was...
Identify yourself for the record, Hank.
Hank Ostrowski from Macnick.
Go ahead.
We've got a problem out there in Bristol Bay there. It lends itself to the taxing of the governmental bodies there. It probably goes just a little step, one step further. we have like an island within that borough. This is the federal reserve there in which people live and work. It represents about a third of the vote of the total borough. And it has affected quite a few elections in the fact that we don't have no planning and zoning powers over it. We don't have any power to tax, nor actually do we have power to impose any school or anything of this nature. And in recent, school bonds elections, the school bonds were, say, voted down, and we finally got it through due to the fact that we had fairly good votes in the other two districts. But we had to go through it twice. We had to win the election twice because of other pressures coming from that end. And right now we're trying to reclassify our borough from a second class to a first class. And these people have consistently voted against any change in the positive direction. In fact, like sewer and water systems, they have about 7 sewer and water systems within a 1 mile square area with the military. And we don't have anything down there in, say, Naknek and South Naknek, where the residents live. And we were wondering if there was some way, since we do not have any jurisdiction over this, like an island within it, just as well sitting out, there's some way that this can, there's some way we could interject something in here that would probably exclude these federal compounds and military. And lots of times they've put people working on the base, and they've met the 30-day borough requirement, and they put them in as ringers. 2 elections that happened, defeated some candidates on this. And it's a problem. Now, if we're going to go for second to first class borough now, I think the issue should be decided by the people who actually live there and who are actually going to be paying the taxes and everything that are, because to get these improvements. I'm just wondering if there's some way that we could, say, resolve the situation.
Greg?
I was working on a technical point here. What he's trying to say was there's a Federal Reserve effect where people are sort of regressive and they tend to vote against matters that maybe the majority of the people want to live outside of this military, well, not military, but this Federal Reserve. And I'm wondering if there's some way can exclude them from voting in these elections on bond issues and matters that pertain to the general area. That's the substance of what you're saying.
Right. I think it's going to be a very critical issue when we start going from second to first class. We've got a petition in right now to increase the borough. Now, the majority say the people that live there, I know, will be probably voting for that first class borough status. With the overwhelming block votes, you know what they've been ringing on us now, the block vote, they just go wham, one candidate, boom, we're dead.
What kind of reservation is it?
That's a FAA compound, and they got a military base there.
Receive federal impact funds for school purposes? That's
874.
That means then, in effect, see, what that means is that the people who are living on the federal property are not paying taxes, the federal government is making contributions to those taxes for them.
Well, the same thing as the people up at Leavelock. They have boats in our borough and stuff of this nature. They pay taxes to the property taxes to the borough, yet they don't vote in our elections.
Do all these people get these boroughs, the federal government gives these families for...
Yes, they take those, what they call, return rights.
Do those people vote?
Yes, they all
vote. Well, that's interesting. That came up here in Juneau, too, You have to, I think, swear under oath that you're a domicile of the place you're going. You never give up your residence, or you can't go back there. Mike, this is something that you may be interested in this June. Really, that's something that maybe, just to give you a little hint...
Yes.
Because if these people are registering to vote and swearing to residents of Alaska, then taking that furlough, and then swearing at their residents of Michigan at the same time, I think we can all see that there's something wrong. That's a good percent
of the
people. Want to look into.
We have already looked into that more or less, and we've been getting the runaround that this is okay. They can swear under the federal deal, but they can... Our last borough manager told us that.
Well, let's ask if there are some possible solutions here. Would you want them to be excluded from the borough and no longer getting 7.4 funds in?
Heck, I mean, we don't have to put the school facility there. We could, we're starting to get overcrowded now, I think, a lot.
Well, then let me ask you the second thing, then. How would they function out there? Would they have their own schools, you mean?
Well, I mean, just like I said, the 874 doesn't give them the right to vote, just like the people from Leavelock have pay taxes into our borough right now, and they don't vote in the borough because they're, say, I can't see any difference from an island here or you put the island out there.
Well, one of them's inside the borough, the other's not.
Yeah.
That's the difference.
Yeah, I mean, the boundary surrounds it, but yet they're isolated, see? Because we have no jurisdiction whatsoever over them, nothing. And as a result, like on planning and zoning, right now, they've got right on that between the military base and the FAA compound, even the state, they've got about 7 sewer and water systems. We don't have one.
Well,
you can't plan, can't coordinate.
Can you enact any kind of an ordinance that has any effect on them? They're exempt from them.
Yeah, they're completely exempt. There's no ordinance.
It's federal property, in other words.
Yeah.
Well, we have federal property in Anchorage, Juneau, and Fairbanks today. The city ordinance is speed requirements and all kinds of things apply to the people that live there. And
when they come off the base.
Pardon?
When they come off the reservation, but when they're on the reservation, you can't.
Well, there are different kinds of reservations and different kinds of ownership. I didn't know that FAA, though, sometimes military reservations specifically are exempt from the local civilian authority and police powers. But generally speaking, I didn't think that was true of anything like the FAA or the Weather Bureau or any one of the, what you just call a civilian operating agency. I
can
maybe be wrong on that.
Who are your attorney for that borough
down there? What's Burton Bisson? I think it's Davis now.
You're a second class borough, aren't you?
Yes.
So the only functions you are trying to, what functions do you have in the second class?
We have just mandatory powers, plus we have police protection and a garbage dump.
Police protection?
Yeah.
Do you have ordinances as to assault and battery and public drunkenness and
No, the state, we have the state police under contract. We pay the state police to do this.
You don't have any police ordinances yourself?
No.
Do the state police enforce the state law on the reservation?
Yeah, they can on the state portion of it, but I think the military, that take part.
Well, they had an assault battery case there, a guy beating up his wife and living on the reservation, and the state police go out there and handle the problem just like you do with somebody else, or somebody got shot. What's the right to kill somebody out there? Take him to town for murder?
I don't know. I mean, as far as what happens on a reservation, as far as what happens on a military reservation, the MP take care of that.
Well, I don't think you've got a military reservation. I think that what we're really getting down to is you do have the authority there, except you don't have the authority to tax because it's federal property, and you're getting 874 funds from the federal government in lieu of that. And I'll admit you've got a voting problem, but you can't keep those people from voting.
No, we don't even have planning and zoning powers on there. Because just like on a school there, they had the school property here, and then they wanted to, on this state ground, they wanted to build a church right next to the school. And the borough sent in its objections, about this because they figured if the school was going to expand, see, it's on federal property. School, the borough runs it. And they figured, well, if they wanted to expand that school, they wanted room to put playgrounds and a whole bit. Well, they FAA went ahead and gave the thing. They built it, and they told the borough, well, that's tough.
Hank, rather than I appreciate you bringing up Massey, just to say one of the functions of the local affairs agency is precisely this, to give assistance to these problems. Sig, and I was wondering if before the hearings are over, if you would mind giving some assistance to Hank and maybe check up some precedent, find out the problem factually. Maybe the committee can assist him before we break up, because I don't know whether it can be the subject of this bill is why we're here.
Yeah.
And if maybe you give some advice on that or it can help NACTEC, would you be willing to do this?
Mr. Chairman, Sig Strandberg for the record. We'd be more than happy to work with Hank after we perhaps
you get the facts.
To get the facts together. Yeah. I think we have a situation here. We have a military base that is included within the boundaries of the organized borough. And we're speaking of the King Salmon Air Force Base, and I think Hank, and correct me if I'm wrong,
the FAA station is right on the military base, is that correct?
Yeah. It's part of the...
Probably your property.
I thought we were talking about a FAA compound, not a military base. You've got a military base, you're in a different situation.
Yeah, it's all sort of...
Would that be, because if we need legislation, I'm sure the Joint Committee will consider an amendment to this bill if it's a proper subject of legislation, but I'd rather have you do the homework on it, if you don't mind, and then...
Fine.
Appreciate you bringing it up. Now, is there anything else that we want to testify on this bill? Well, I certainly appreciate it.
Yes, go ahead. I don't expect this to be incorporated as part of the bill, but speaking of platforms, I'd just like to plant a seed right now, maybe next year, if we get this one due this year. But it's been a thought of mine for many years that municipalities are missing one vital tool that they need badly in their taxation portfolio, and that's the tool of a municipal income tax. And it could be handled actually very simply as a piggyback onto the state. If any local municipality had to set up its own little Bureau of Internal Revenue, of course, it would be ridiculous, and the cost would far exceed the value. But as a piggyback on top of the state, it's, you know, nobody likes taxes, but I'm convinced, always have been, that's absolutely the fairest tax there is. And with, you know, with something like this as a platform, a coordinated set of municipal laws as a platform, I think one year we may be able to give the municipalities that tool, which they badly need. Property taxes are bad, and sales taxes are even worse. Sales tax, income tax, I think, is the only fair and equitable answer.
You think in lieu of ad valorem taxes, income taxes, or both, just added on existing sales? And
well, in order to be palatable to sell it, you probably have to make it in lieu of, because the great fear of people is that you're adding one more tax, that means you're going to add 30% more taxes. So my thought has always been, maybe say that a municipality that voluntarily foregoes, say, a sales tax would have this income tax option open to it. And as a perennial detester of sales taxes, that satisfies still another one.
Matt, you know, I guess I've been in government long enough to know nothing happens unless it's on a piece of paper. May I suggest that we get a proposed language to be considered by the committee in the bill that may give the option and leave that form something to deal with? I was wondering if the city attorneys over here, the borough attorneys, would agree with Mike and maybe come up with a suggestion, because these are good ideas, but this is on a piece of paper.
As the chairman, income tax, you
know, separate. Well, as I say, I just want to plant the seed. I don't want to endanger this.
No, it isn't in danger. I think it's something that I'd like to see. It seems to me that if you, maybe it'd be very palatable if you make it in lieu of ad valorem. I mean, they don't have the power now, as I read the law. They don't have the power to levy a sales tax.
Expressly prohibited.
They don't have it. Yeah. Couldn't do it if they wanted to.
Income tax,
I mean. And what he's suggesting is that maybe we can get the option, which is pretty palatable.
The whole rule.
Mr. Chairman?
Specifically excluded.
Well, have it,
very have interesting point, I'll see. Maybe it's progressive.
Mr. Chairman?
Excuse me, go ahead. Representative Swanson.
I've heard a little of this discussion in the background of the borough income tax versus the real or property tax. And we're going to take the property tax off and put a tax on just a regular income tax on wages, like it's deducted out of your check. I've heard a little discussion of this in the background, and I have some misgivings. I have some real mixed emotions about putting the burden on the working man on the street now in lieu of the property tax for the man who owns a 10-story building down here. Now, we're getting into a field where balance of what you could get in versus what you're getting now might be not even anywhere near one another.
One thing that I'm sure, appreciate that. Red, I think that's a good suggestion. I mean, it's certainly...
I wouldn't mind taking the opposition to it.
The point is...
I'd like to see it brought out and really kicked around.
That's what I'm thinking, too. Uh-huh. It would be an option. It would be very politically palatable. You know, if the city
good argument.
Had
might
the
bring
option
out something
to do
good.
Yes, go ahead.
I'm speaking for myself now. But I would rather not see it in this bill. I suspect that there is so much in the way of research, for example, that should be done on this proposal. And personally, I'm personally in favor of it as a separate bill, but as part of this bill. I would hope that we wouldn't jeopardize.
Well, we appreciate your view. The committee will make that decision. But Mike wants to pursue it. Fine. Hey, there's one little thing that I think that you fellas would like some testimony on tomorrow. You may not read it in the bill, but the committee made one change to the bill. Greg,
and you pointed out to them?
Yes, sir. One change the committee had asked be made in the lead draft has to do with the date of municipal elections, both for the school board and for borough and city officials. The committee wanted it set concurrently with the date of state elections, namely the, what is it, the Tuesday
after the first Monday.
After the first Monday in November. That change has been grafted on the bill. I thought that should be pointed out so no one's surprised. Other than that, nothing but technical and drafting changes, word changes, purpose technical and drafting have been made. I think I can say that without exception. I had worked with Mr. Barrier in putting this into form. The proposal for annexation by ordinance was left out of the committee.
Well, we mentioned, because we want you to think about it, come back tomorrow and testify. We're going to ask you a question about it because the committee will certainly listen and change. It's absolutely impractical. At least I'd be inclined to. I'm not speaking to the rest of them. We wanted to put it in because our constituents, I got a lot of complaints. Some of the other people did have this duplication, one in October, one in November. And so we put it in so that we'd period it. Now we really want some testimony on it tomorrow afternoon. Yes, Jim.
This has always been a matter of the state legislature refusing to make this change in the past.
I know, that's... things change, just like the public service do. But in any event, we would appreciate Bob, and maybe even you, if you don't mind, think about it, if you wouldn't mind commenting on it tomorrow.
I won't be available tomorrow, but I'll comment to you on it.
I appreciate it, because it's something that maybe we can reform a public service if everybody agrees on. They don't agree to make the legislature.
Yes, there's definitely two sides to it.
There absolutely is.
You take a year like this when the state has got 21 bond issues on the referendum and you're trying to get a school bond issue through or something, you don't want anything to do with the state and their 21 bond issues on the same election.
You put it well. There's another side to it, too. Okay. If there's no other witnesses, go ahead, Mike.
Well, just one quick thing. My apologies. I want to make some introductions I should have made earlier. Number one, our very efficient secretary, Kathy Paretovich, and
Jim.
Right, and Jim Rode, the administrative assistant for the House committee, and Sig, of course, came in late to introduce himself. But I also wanted to introduce Alice Crosby, who's here representing the Association of State School Boards. Now that we're getting ready to adjourn, we'll introduce
them. Very good. Very good.
Yes, Don.
What time tomorrow?
2 to 6, incidentally.
Same room, sir?
Yes, incidentally, the Cordova matter is going to be, now per agreement, you remember, the Cordova can come in at 5 o'clock.
Well, no, that's Wednesday.
Is that Wednesday? Well,
yeah, it's that's when his group,
you sure it's Wednesday?
Scheduled.
We're going to be in Anchorage on Wednesday,
right.
Aren't we?
Yeah, Wednesday night, yes. Yeah. The Cordova is Wednesday night.
Okay, thank you. We certainly appreciate you coming in tonight, and I'd like to see you tomorrow. I threw that hooker at you because I know to get you back in here tomorrow.
We'll see you too. We'll be back.
You want it? So you can't sneak it on.